Before we get to today's Survivor recap with Eric Reichenbach, I want to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors, Happy Socks. And with me here in the studio to talk about it is Dominic. Eric Reichenbach, I want to take a moment and thank one of our sponsors, Happy Socks. And with me here in the studio to talk about it is Dominic Cesarino. Dominic, how are you?
Good.
Dominic, do you like socks?
I like to take them off when I get home from school.
You do? Okay. Check out these new socks that I got from Happy Socks, where Happy Socks' mission is to spread happiness by turning an everyday essential item into colorful design piece. Would you like my new socks from Happy Socks?
Yeah.
Yeah? Well, can you talk about them? Are they better or worse than my regular socks?
They're better than your regular socks.
Why?
Because I like them and they're colorful.
Yeah, because they have a dress, athletic, low, and liner socks for men, women, and for children. And they even have collaborations with the Beatles. You like the Beatles? Yeah. Wiz Khalifa, how about them?
You can have them back.
Okay. Yeah. Give me back those socks. And Keith Haring and more.
I want them.
Socks are a great gift for people as well, right?
Yeah.
People like socks?
Yeah.
Get them for birthdays, anniversaries, back to school, weddings, whatever.
I like socks. I get some new ones sometimes.
Yeah. Well, check out happysocks.com and use the promo code RHAP to get 20% off and free shipping on your next order.
Yeah, that's super good.
That is super good. So life is too short for boring socks. So go ahead and get 20% off and free shipping when you use promo code RHAP. What's that promo code?
Happy Socks.
RHAP at happysocks.com for 20% off and free shipping. Thank you, Dominic.
All right. Is the podcast over?
Yes. Coming live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy whose job it is to have side conversations. I am Rob Cesarino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast for our recap of episode number 3. We're going to be talking today with Eric Reichenbach, who I'm very excited to reconnect with. Of course, so many of us saw him on the finale of Survivor Ghost Island. I'm sure we'll talk about that and much more, everything going on here in episode number 3 of Survivor David versus Goliath. We had the Survivor Know-It-Alls on Wednesday night. And then a very interesting exit interview. Jeremy making a lot of headlines with a controversial week on the exit interview circuit. Maybe the most controversial week we've had on the exit interview circuit since the infamous SheKnows.com week of for Desi in season 35 of Survivor, going back almost a year. So a very controversial week for Jeremy and some of the comments that he made about Angelina in the exit interviews this week. You can catch that. And also a very memorable week on the This Week in Survivor History quiz with Jordan Kalish as I took on Will from America in the quiz. We're going to get to our feedback show coming up over the weekend. I'm going to talk with Tyler Fredrickson. Very excited about that. He's going to be here in the studio with me. So pumped up about that. And then we'll talk with Josh on Monday for this week's edition of The Wiggle Room. Before we get to Eric Reichenbach, I want to thank one more sponsor here, and then we will be uninterrupted for my conversation with Eric, and those are friends over at Beachbody On Demand. Beachbody On Demand is the easiest way that you can get in shape from the comfort of your own home. Over 1 million people are currently on Beachbody On Demand, and you can get a free trial membership. All you have to do is text the word ROB to 303030. I love doing Beachbody On Demand. I don't have any cardio equipment in my house. What I like to do is a little program called Core de Force. It is like a cardio kickboxing. I feel like Be Nguyen out there, except that my knees don't hurt, because Beachbody On Demand is perfect for anybody who is busy, doesn't have time to get to the gym, has kids, has a job that's really taking up a lot of your time. Beachbody On Demand is the way to go, because they are the company that started P90X, Insanity, 21 Day Fix, T25, Brazil, Butt Lift, Pio, Hip Hop, Abs, You name it, they've got the world-class trainers and the best programs. Over 700 workouts at all fitness levels, ranging from bodybuilding to weight training to cardio to yoga and even dance workouts, plus nutrition help as well. Work out on your schedule with workouts as short as 10 minutes that don't require any extra equipment. In the time it would take you to drive and park at the gym, you could be finished with your workout and access Beachbody On Demand anywhere, anytime on your computer, web-enabled TV, tablet, smartphone, Roku, Apple TV. It's the easiest way to get a workout from the comfort of your own home. So for the best deal in fitness, our listeners can try out Beachbody On Demand right now, absolutely for free. What are you waiting for? Over 1 million people are already on it. All you have to do for that free trial membership is text the word ROB to 30 30 30. You'll get the full access to the entire platform for free, all the workouts, nutritional information, and support totally for free. Again, just text the word ROB, R-O-B, to 30 30 30. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our guest this week on the podcast, and this is somebody that I'm always very excited to talk to, and it's been a minute since we've done one of these interviews here on ROB's podcast, but of course, you know him from his two seasons on Survivor and, of course, his outstanding work providing the cartoon illustrations for Stephen Fishback's weekly People blog. Please welcome back Mr. Eric Reichenbach. Eric, how are you?
Hey, Eric. Thanks for having me, Rob.
Yeah. Eric, nice to talk to you.
Yeah. It has been a while. I can't remember when. It probably was Ghost Island.
Well, I don't think that we did an interview during Ghost Island. I'm not sure if I saw you. You were on Ghost Island, and we talked a lot about you and your necklace on Ghost Island. But I think that the last time that we talked after an episode, I want to say it was probably 5 years ago, Eric.
Oh, so then probably Karamoan then?
Yeah, no, I think we were right after. I think we probably talked during Blood versus Water.
I don't know even what day it is right now, man.
Today, it's October 10th. That we're recording this Wednesday night and right after the episode. But I'm pretty sure that we probably talked following the season that you were on. Yeah, on Halloween Day, October 31st, 2013.
Yeah, Game Changers, right. I'm just throwing out seasons now.
Yes.
It sounds like you know what you're talking about, so mm-hmm. We're just going to go on that.
Yeah, and I also remember the first time I ever talked to you on the podcast, and that was way back, and it was 8 years ago, and I talked to you right before the Heroes versus Villains finale.
Like, I feel like the internet's really young, and, like, podcasts are really young, but that's, like, forever. Like, that's crazy. Feels like my whole life.
I mean, how old are you now, Eric?
32. Okay. Turning 33 in like less than a month.
Okay. So, I mean, it is a big part of your life.
Yeah. It's crazy. It's weird that you're putting it in perspective for me, because I don't stop to think. Like, it's like day to day happens, you know, mm-hmm. Doing stuff, drawing stuff, eating stuff, running around. And then when you put numbers down like that, that's pretty epic. That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, Eric, thank you for coming on to talk to us here during Survivor David versus Goliath episode number 3. And what is your enjoyment level so far of Survivor David versus Goliath?
I actually like it a lot. It would be up there. It would be at like a 7 or an 8, I would say. Mm-hmm. And I like the character development. I think I spoke about that a little. I said something about that on Twitter today. I just like seeing, you know, it's really surprising. There's kind of this vulnerability that they're starting to show. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've shown vulnerability in the past with characters, but it's really interesting how in depth they're going with kind of the David tribe and showing that, you know, weakness is strength kind of thing. And they did that a little today with Jeremy as well.
Yeah. And so ultimately, we lost Jeremy. Was he a favorite of yours, Eric?
You know, he wasn't until this episode. Mm-hmm. I think last episode he was a little interesting. Like, he just kind of got introduced because it's hard to it's hard to like jostle for position in the editing with so many people out there playing so many different things. But you know, he showed up this episode, and I liked him from what I saw. And I started to learn, like, oh, you know what, this guy could go the distance. And then it was too late; he was gone.
Now, when you watch the episode, I know that then you do the illustration that is, you know, people really love to see those every single week. What is that process like for you?
So I'll watch the episode and I'll kind of start to see like themes or ideas. And I'll kind of pick up on what people are saying on Twitter, certain different conversations going on and people saying things. Usually Stephen Fishbach has some good insights that he'll post out on Twitter.
Amazing.
Read into.
Yes.
Yeah. Like instantly. And it's like instantly because there's all the Twitterverse is pretty interesting just because of how many, you know, former survivors contestants are on there commenting on it as it happens.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I kind of look at the trends and I see, you know, what's going on. And if I have an opinion on something that's like, maybe this makes sense. Maybe this is a topic that should be covered, or this is a dynamic between two characters that should be covered. I formulate the idea. And then from there, it's penciling it, inking it, scanning it, and then coloring it, and then sending it over to people.
Yeah. And how quick of a turnaround is that for you?
So it varies. If I have the idea, like if the idea is like crystallized and it's there, I will start sketching towards the end of the episode. So maybe like 20 minutes left in the episode, I'll just start penciling stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then after it ends, it's about an hour of finishing up pencil, finishing up ink, scan it, which takes a couple seconds, and then coloring takes possibly up to an hour. So it's about a 2-hour turnaround, like a 2 to 3 hour turnaround.
Wow. And it's impressive because you get them out every single week. And what was it that you saw on Wednesday night's episode that became the illustration you did for this episode?
So, I mean, the dynamic with Jeremy and Natalie, I mean, that was the big thing that really stood out to me as really interesting. And it wasn't the surface level of like a Philip Shepherd where he's just like annoying somebody to annoy them.
Mm-hmm.
It's more this dynamic. It's almost like a frenemy situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like they both kind of respect each other, but at the same time, they're at odds with each other. So it was really interesting, just a really interesting dynamic. It was funny because at the end of my comic, the joke punchline for the comic is, so we can't vote them both out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like they're bickering, they're arguing, but we can't vote both of them out. But people online were even saying like, keep both of these people around. They make really good TV.
Yeah. I really was very disappointed to have to lose one of the two because, you know, I selfishly, you know, I really, you know, I want to see great gameplay, but I also want to be entertained. And so part of me dies inside whenever I see somebody who is really bringing it on this show being somebody who goes out early on.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, too, because if you saw like what their interaction, so we have Jeremy and Natalie kind of bickering and going at it back and forth. It was interesting to see the dynamic of the rest of the Goliath tribe, which has all these alphas essentially on it. And they're all kind of like reservedly, like looking at it, like we shouldn't be doing anything with this. Like they're kind of staying their distance from it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think every single one of the Goliaths will have a moment later in the game where they are fighting for their life. So we'll kind of see some reflections of this episode later.
Now, Eric, I think you're a really fun person to talk to in general, but especially about this season, because your two seasons that you played on were both kind of David versus Goliath seasons in fans versus favorites. And you were on the original fans tribe, which was a David tribe of sorts, and then came back and played on the favorites tribe, which is a Goliath tribe of sorts. So do you feel like that you can relate to this idea of David versus Goliath as a survivor theme?
Oh yeah. And I mean, you can see it, you can see the confidence in the Goliath players, like just how, like you just see how they're acting. Like you can see that they're like, yeah, we got it, we're under control.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the David tribe, you see struggle. You really see them like dig in and struggle. I think at the end of that immunity challenge, I thought Davey was going to pop a blood vessel in his forehead from pulling the rope.
Mm-hmm.
They're digging in, and it's pretty awesome to see. Really, it's kind of has those like what I said before, these mirrors of those earlier seasons.
So which of these tribes do you relate more to your survivor experience? Is it the David tribe from the first time you played, or the Goliath tribe from the second time you played?
It's a little bit of both. Like the David tribe is very similar in a lot of ways to a fans tribe in that respect, because they are, you know, they're the underdog. You want to root for them, but at the same time, they can't get it together, or they're having their own struggles. And then you have the Goliath tribe that just like some of the Goliath tribe, it looked like they don't need the money. They're in it for the challenge. They're in it for the adventure or whatever it might be. They're in it for the ego, which I definitely saw on the Favorites tribe on my past seasons too. So it is definitely a little bit of both.
So in terms of Jeremy being the person to go out, do you feel like that Jeremy did one thing especially wrong in your mind?
I mean, the paranoia. He got really into it. He got really into the gameplay too early, which scared everybody. You don't sit people down for a powwow. I mean, like, and that probably came about from him, you know, trying to micromanage the situation, or he had some anxieties of his own. And so he wanted to like air those anxieties in what he thought might be a publicly acceptable space. But that, I mean, it's such a social game. Mm-hmm. Like Survivor is so social, like any kind of like skittishness or anxiety, it kind of poisons the water.
Yeah. I do think you're right. I think people can sense that. And I think that something about you, and you've had a lot of longevity in this game, that you've made it to the final five both times that you played, that you don't seem to have that. Is that just what it looks like, or is that just not something that you experience out there?
Oh, no. Hell, I totally have anxiety out there. But
is it about being voted off? Is that what it's about?
No, not really. I mean, first day of, you know, Fans versus Favorites, I was super nervous. Like, I'm going to get voted out first. And there's no basis. There's like no reason behind that. Like, you just have a fear of it. But like, even in Karamoan, like, you have anxieties about like, oh, what if I'm not doing something right? What if something is going to go wrong? What if I'm missing out on a conversation? And there's like public, there's like ways to manage that without like having a public meltdown, I guess, mm-hmm. like having a public, you know, explosion. And some players actually use anxiety to their advantage. I think a lot of players will leak information like a sieve, mm-hmm. to their respective allies. And it's kind of a benefit to them when they start leaking, because their allies then see like, oh, this person has anxiety, and then they leak information. I want to keep them around. But I mean, with anxiety, there's ways to manage it that aren't destructive.
Can you give me an example of the type of information that somebody would leak, or somebody that you played with that did that?
Yeah, like a great example would be like food. Like if somebody won food, we would always come back from a challenge, and we had won a food eating challenge. Everybody had a bunch of food for a reward, and you come back and you let everybody know like, oh yeah, we were talking during the challenge, or something had happened during the reward, where we all were making different alliances and things. Mm-hmm. Conversations were happening. And if you have anxiety from coming back, or somebody else there has anxiety, you can kind of, you know, say like, I'm really nervous. I was away. I'm worried that a conversation happened while I was gone. And so if you have that anxiety that goes on, you want to leak that only to the people that you trust, or the people that you want to generate trust with. Because that'll help alleviate your stress. Like, you will feel better about, you know, what you're doing, but you're not leaking it to some random person that you found, or you're not having like a team powwow. So you're leaking to every single person on the team. It's like your relationship building. So you don't just air it to anybody. Like, you air your anxieties to the correct people.
Do you think that for Jeremy in particular, that had this group gone to a tribal council day three or day six, that it would have been better for him, that whatever sort of anxiety he was feeling about the vote would have already been out of his system? Or do you think that it wouldn't have changed, that he would have been next had Natalie gone home?
I think that's a pretty good analysis. If they would have vented earlier, Jeremy probably would have been fine, because mm-hmm. he would have been able to vent. In Karamoan, I owe a lot of Brandon Hance's meltdown to us not going to tribal council. So the Favorites tribe in Karamoan didn't go to tribal council for quite a few in a row, because we just kept winning. And Brandon Hance just was like cooking, like just like stirring and churning up all this paranoia over time. And it just came to a head one day when Philip was, you know, doing what Philip does. Mm-hmm. And that contributed a lot to Brandon Hans exploding. I see a lot of parallels between that and what occurred here.
How so? Just that it was this tension was building up between Jeremy and Natalie?
Yeah, just like tension over time that doesn't ever get resolved, like never gets massaged mm-hmm. out or never gets like aired. It's like living with somebody that like annoys you. Like if you have like a roommate who's just like terrible, or if you like live in an apartment building and there are people nearby who are just like always doing noisy things and you never get to talk to them about it. Like one day you might explode on them mm-hmm. or you might do something really stupid.
So do you feel like, is that part of the recipe for a successful tribe, is that they have to regularly go to tribal council? Like they shouldn't go too long without missing a vote?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm not going to crunch numbers on this, but I think if you would look back in the past and see who's been successful long term, mm-hmm. Like who wins Survivor, I think a lot of players go through a lot of tribals when they end up at the end. Like I think that more people who go through more struggle with regard to going to tribal council have a better success rate.
Yeah. That's interesting. There have been certainly, you know, winners that don't go to the tribal council before the merge. And then you have like somebody like Denise Stapley who went to every single tribal council. So I think that there's been success both ways, but that would be interesting to sort of track whether, you know, people who have been to more tribal councils early on have been more successful than people who have been to less tribal councils early on.
Right. I think I would be surprised to look at the results. I would be interested to look at those results.
Yeah.
That's a quest for Survivor Reddit. Because I know Survivor Reddit will randomly have these spreadsheets that are just amazing, just incredible spreadsheets of information I didn't even know that I needed to see about all kinds of things. So,
yeah. Do you follow that type of stuff, regularly? Because I know that you were a super fan of the show going on the first time, but then I thought that maybe you wouldn't follow that stuff as closely. Then I felt like after the second time you played that you were a little bit out of following this stuff super closely.
So I was for a time. So I think I'm trying to remember what Brenda's first season was. Not San Juan del Sur. I kind of watched that season. There's a couple seasons in between Micronesia and Karamoan that I did not watch at all. So Brenda's first season, for example, with Marty and all them, Nicaragua. I did not watch that season. Yeah. Nicaragua. Did not watch any Nicaragua at all. But I did watch pieces and parts of seasons in there. But now since I've been doing the comic, I'm completely like back into it. Mm-hmm. Like I'm watching every season, watching every episode. And I've tried to stay in touch with the community, with like the Survivor fan base. Just because I don't want to fall out of touch with it, and especially if I'm making comics on it, like I don't want to depict something that's incorrect.
Yeah. Well, it is a fun, you know, experience to be able to, because you look at it from a different perspective, I think, because I feel like that it's not dissimilar from what I do with the podcast, where I think that for a lot of the survivors, I think the experience is like Survivor is something that happens to them and they're sort of looking at the prism of maybe it's something I'm going to do again. But then when you're doing something that's sort of like an artistic endeavor, that you're, you know, looking at it with the same eyes as somebody who is, watching it as a fan.
Right. Right. You can turn on both. Like you can turn on both lenses. Mm-hmm. Like it's funny because people make dumb mistakes all the time on this show, and they highlight dumb mistakes more, I feel, lately. Yes. Like in season since Micronesia, really. Mm-hmm. And I can laugh at it because I'm like the king of the dumb moves that mm-hmm. happen. So I can laugh at anybody. But I also kind of know, like, you know, this is a show. People make mistakes. I think like some people take it really personally, like they feel really like attacked and people get attacked. And ultimately, like it's like both, like it's entertaining and funny because a dumb mistake happened. But at the same time, like this is a real person. This is a really tough show to win, like a tough game to win. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit of both. Yeah.
Well, I thought that there was something that was so interesting that was the part of where you came back to the show in Survivor Ghost Island and you came to the finale. And so I pulled that clip from what Jeff said to you during that conversation, if I can play it here for you. And so let's go back to the Ghost Island reunion show.
You can see James, the burden, lift like a little angel's lift right off his shoulders and float over to Eric's. Eric, Parvati had a line where she goes, "You will officially go down as the dumbest survivor ever." At what point did sense of humor have to kick in for you to not feel bad about that?
I mean, just to be there was like amazing for me as a fan of the show. Like, you know, I saw you. I'm like, Jeff Probst is right there. He's standing there. And as a fan of the show, like every day was a gift my first season. So, I mean, there's so much to this. Like with these mistakes, they show you who you are as a human. Like these human moments show up because everybody makes mistakes. And over time, I've had to, you know, kind of work through all of that. If you don't laugh, you're going to cry. That's part of it,
and
too.
So you're laughing with it now. Yeah. Because just like James, I forget that Eric made it to Final Five, lasted 36 days, both times he played, won challenges. I mean, you're an all-star player. Yeah. So we're reframing history right now.
So I think that it's interesting what Jeff is saying there, that through this different prism of, hey, you were trying to make big moves. That's what is celebrated now.
Yeah, it's so I'm glad you played that clip for me because I have not seen that clip at all or heard that clip since. And I thought I totally like biffed that question. Like I didn't even answer the question that was asked. And secondly, James had alcohol in the green room, mm-hmm. which was really nice. And so I was a little like, and also this was just after like the Wendell and Dom thing, mm-hmm. like Wendell and Dom tied. So we were like blown away, like, holy crap. Like we have to follow up that. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, like it was really odd. Like I thought it was a surprise, like a turnaround that Jeff said that because I've been, you know, every other clip I've been in associated with Survivor was dumbest player ever, mm-hmm. dumbest player ever, dumbest player ever, dumbest player ever. And like, I talk to people all the time and they're like, yeah, you're that dumb. You're the dumbest player ever. You're stupid. You did a dumb move. And I'm like, but I made Final Five twice. Like I did something mm-hmm. right.
Yeah.
So
it's just an interesting shift where, you know, that the aggressive gameplay is what's, you know, really rewarded. And now I feel like that, you know, in terms of Survivor, like the worst thing you can do is somebody who doesn't do anything. You know, if you just, right. you know, go to the end and get voted out, it's like, Eric, why didn't you make a move? Why did you try to do something?
Right, right. And there was a lot of pressure to do that as well. I mean, I think that was one of the arguments, one of the big arguments my first season that never got shown was Parvati and Amanda saying, you haven't done anything all game. Mm-hmm. You need to do something. You need to act.
Yeah.
And it was to, you know, destroy myself.
Yeah. I mean, Laurel last season was somebody who really got beat up online for, you know, why did you go to the end with Dominic and Wendell? Why didn't you do something? Why didn't you make a move? Yeah. So, you know, yeah. That it's almost, I think, worse now than, you know, to not make a move, then make a move that could potentially be seen as, you know, over aggressive.
Yeah. The interesting thing that I think a lot of people who watch Survivor should know is that the end game is such a strange environment because, first of all, statistically, it's just very difficult to, first of all, get on Survivor, let alone make it into that bottleneck of like Final Four, Final Five, Final Six. Like very few people have been in that bottleneck, mm-hmm. let alone navigated it to a victory. So it's like a very strange place to be. And a lot of people, you know, are, you know, you've been fighting up to that point through, you know, vote the first however many votes to that point. So you're with a certain group of people now in a very strange place and not a lot of, you know, it's really bizarre. Like it's a very tough environment to navigate, especially with regard to awareness.
Yeah.
It's easy to make a mistake, I guess I should say.
Right. Right. When they reached out to you to participate in the finale, can I ask what did they tell you they were going to do?
So it's really weird because So the season was announced that it was Ghost Island, and they showed my face on TV like the first thing, and then they showed James. And then my mom called me and she said, "You were on Survivor again and you didn't tell me." And I was like, "No, I wasn't, Mom. It was it's part of the theme, it's part of the thing." And so the Ghost Island started to play, and like two or three episodes in, I noticed that they kept showing like the flashback to me. And I was telling Dana, I was like, you know, they're showing a lot of me. I think they're going to take me to the finale. And she's like, "Well, why didn't they call? Like, they would have called you, I would have thought." And I'm like, "No, they kind of don't work like that. They kind of, you know, wait till the last minute and do it." And so we waited and we waited. And then the episode before the finale episode aired, and the very next day I got a phone call from them saying, "We want to fly you out to LA this weekend for the finale." And I was like, I knew it. I knew that this was going to happen. And so they flew me out. They flew me and Dana out on a Saturday. It was a Friday or a Saturday. We were there all weekend. And we had to kind of hide in the hotel for a day because we were kind of a secret. And then we were there for the finale. No, we were there. The finale was on Wednesday. Yeah. So we flew out, I think, on a Sunday. Anyway, so we were there for like one or two days, and we kind of had to hide out in the hotel. And then the day of the finale, they flew in James, and James flew in that day, went to the finale, and then they flew him home because he had a body on ice, he said, back home that he had to get ready for a funeral. and so he runs his, you know, mortuary services. So he literally had a dead person in an icy box somewhere that he had to get back to in Louisiana to take care of. So
yeah,
he had an interest. Yeah. He had a much more interesting like turnaround than I did
on Ghost Island. Yeah. That's crazy. Just to go back to you though, in terms of what I thought they were going to do during the finale was that Wendell had your necklace, and the whole season was about reversing this curse of that you cursed the necklace because you gave it away to one of the women on the tribe. And then here was Wendell in this season, and he gave the necklace to a woman in the tribe, Laurel. And then Laurel cast the deciding vote for him to win, maybe partially related to the fact that he gave her your cursed necklace. And like a fairy tale, I thought that that reversed the curse. And I thought that they were going to tell you, "Eric, you are free from the cursed necklace."
It was so bizarre. Like, you can't write that. Like, you can't write it any better. Like, and I'm like, people ask me all the time, like, is Survivor, like, Survivor's fake, right? It's scripted. It's not. Like, that is so bizarre how, like, perfectly reversed that was. It's bizarre. Yeah. It was awesome to meet Wendell. It was awesome to meet Laurel and Dom and everybody. And it was like, it's like this weird coincidence that's like, I can't explain it, but it did feel really good. Like, I wanted Wendell to win, and he did a good thing. Like, everything worked out like correctly.
Now, do you know where that necklace is now?
No, I actually was told I was going to get it back.
Yeah.
Like all the things would return to their contestants or their people, but I never heard about it. So I do not know where it is.
Okay, well, let's go back to David and Goliath. Angelina was the person who was really pushing for Jeremy to be the one to go home. Did you feel like that she was pushing too hard for that on the first vote?
I think she's a little aggressive. I think she is like making like executive decisions on day three, which makes me think that later on, something crazy is going to happen with her, or, I mean, even with the swap coming up next week, something could happen with her. But, it's different. Like, people say things aggressively in confessionals. I know that she was aggressive, you know, like kind of like cornering people around camp. Like, you have to vote this way. You have to vote this way. We have to vote the same. And I mean, on a tribe of alphas, like the Goliaths, that might not you know, pique too many people or make too many people mad. So maybe she's doing fine. Maybe she'll be all right. But that any other season, that'd be pretty aggressive. Yeah.
That being said, she got 9 people on board to go along with that plan. So it seemed to work right out in the moment. Now, Eric, we had
but put her on the David's tribe, though, with that same aggression. And they might just be like, she's really bossy. Let's vote her out.
Now, last week we saw it was Angelina, Natalia, and Kara were talking, and they said, okay, let's make this alliance, and each of us are going to have one of these men that we're going to be mm-hmm. working with. And this was something that came up in the preseason about this idea of trying to recapture the magic of that Black Widow brigade that you love so much. So do you see that as being a possibility this season with this group of women?
I mean, they mentioned it, and if they're all going to be, you know, on board with it, sure. But it's a question of, you know, how tight are they? How strong are they? And that's been the big problem with, like, any kind of, like, same-sex alliance in Survivor. Like, all men, all women. Like, it's not enough just to have, you know, a bond of gender. I think it's a bond of trust and a bond of relationship. Mm. So that's the big question. If they're all very similar in personality, like I think Amanda and Parvati and Sari were in terms of like how they were on Micronesia, then yeah. Oh, hell yeah. It can work.
Yeah.
But it's not about gender. I don't think.
Yeah. I think it's definitely, you know, a tricky thing to try to predict, because when you talk about Parvati and Sari and Amanda, I mean, you're talking about 3 people who are, you know, some of the greatest players to ever play and to be together all in one alliance. You know, it's not like anybody can just recreate that.
Right. Exactly. Especially, I mean, and, you know, no offense to newbies. Like, you know, there are players out there. There are people who come out and break the mold. But we also had, you know, two-time players of Sari, like just the caliber of those mm-hmm. 3. Is like crazy. So yeah.
Were you starstruck the first time you played to be, you know, going down to the end with people that you had seen on television before?
Yeah. Oh yeah. It was bizarre. And it was especially bizarre. Like it wasn't as bizarre for people that for seasons I had not watched as recently, like it was pretty awesome to meet Yao Man. Mm-hmm. Like Yao Man was cool.
Yeah.
And then it was just hilarious to see Johnny Fairplay. And I knew I had to throw sand on him at the first challenge. Like I knew I had to do something to mess with him. But it really was surreal. It was really surreal. And it was very weird to see Jeff Probst. I mean, Jeff Probst also, you know, not a contestant, but definitely like a staple of Survivor was there. So that was another huge thing. But for the most part, I've gotten over that. Like I probably would geek out. I don't know who I would geek out with over now.
I can relate to that, Eric, because when I played the second time on the All-Stars, you know, probably more so than anybody else that was there, I felt like that, you know, I was a fan getting to play with people that I got to watch on television. Whereas, you know, I don't think that there was maybe anybody else out there that was feeling the same way that I was.
Right. And it's so weird, like how prevalent that fandom is in recent seasons. Like you'll see so much more of like, oh my God, we're at Tribal Council. Oh my God, I'm in a challenge. Like it's so different now. And I don't know why, like maybe the younger generation is more open with that or what, but
yeah. No, yeah. It is weird. You know, I feel like that there's Survivor gets hit with that a lot about, you know, recruits and stuff like that. But when I played the first time in the Amazon, you know, I feel like that less than half the people on my season had really ever seen the show before.
Yeah. That might be part of it, too.
So let's talk about the David tribe a little bit. And there was a lot of talk in this episode tonight that we got to see about how, you know, people are mad at Gabby, that she was the person who put together this blindside of Jessica. Do you think that Gabby is going to have to pay for this blindside down the road?
I mean, if half of Mason Dixon alliance like keeps grinding that axe, then yeah, she will. She's such a scapegoat. She's such a scapegoat in this situation. Like you'll see her, like I think in the preview for next episode, she's having like a mental break, like she's having a nervous breakdown. So it's like, she's not the mastermind. She's the misnomer. She's the red herring. So she may have to pay for it later, but I do foresee like the relationship between Christian and Gabby, possibly being stronger. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be the big, that's the big question. That's the big setup we have right now.
This was
right?
Something I was debating with Steven on the know-it-alls was that, do you think that Christian is tighter with Gabby or tighter with Nick? Do you have a feeling about mm-hmm. which way Christian would be leaning if he was pulled in, you know, had that problem of, you know, Spider-Man can either save the city or save Mary Jane?
So far, it looks like Gabby likes Christian more than Christian likes Gabby.
Gabby likes Christian more than Christian likes Gabby.
Yes, I think we've seen more of that, at least. And this is you have to go off of, you know, whatever you're seeing. There's obviously more to it. I think from what we're seeing, we hear a lot of Gabby saying, I really like Christian. He's funny. He's smart. He's a PhD, like all these great things about him. And they have a friendship there. And Christian has a good relationship with his partner in this. What is his name? What is his partner's name in Mason? Nick. Yeah. So Nick and Christian have a pretty good relationship, but I don't see as much of Christian saying good things about Gabby. I think if it had to break, it would be Mason Dixon before Gabby,
so you
Christian.
That Nick. I had said I thought it was Gabby. I just see, they seem like they are spending all of their time together as well. It seems like that they just genuinely like each other. Where I think that Christian has a number of alliances, and Gabby, I think, really has all her eggs in the Christian basket. So I think that he could do better without her than vice versa if Christian was to be taken out. I think that he's more of a key cog for her. But I do feel like that he would pick her over Nick.
Okay. I mean, he could. I mean, it's this, you know, brains over emotion thing. Like, do you stick with the people you like, or do you stick with the people that you need? Mm-hmm. First time players generally make the mistake, I would say, of going with their heart over their head. Like, oh, this person's annoying, let's vote them out, when that same annoying person might be a really good goat at the end. But, or you know, like in the instance of, I honestly don't know. I don't know, because it's such a relationship-based game. Maybe Christian realizes that, or maybe Christian's not even thinking about that. Like, he's just hanging out with her to hang out with her. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of unknowns. I can't. Yeah. I can't do it.
B had that injury in the episode tonight. Are you scared for B's future in this game?
Yes. I thought that was a pretty severe... you know, you could tell that she was hurt, and you could tell that she had a huge brace on her leg. That looked pretty bad. That looked pretty, pretty terrible, honestly.
It was weird, though. I feel like that the show treated it in an odd way, where she was talking about, yeah, I have an issue with I sprained my MCL. And I felt like everybody was looking at her like, wait, how do you know this? How did this happen?
Yeah. Yeah, that was odd. And if she gets pulled later on, was that to soften the blow so it isn't so devastating when it happens? I don't know.
When James had to be evacuated in Fans versus Favorites from the first time, do you remember how that went? Was that all in one episode?
Oh, yeah. I believe it was all in one episode, and it was very abrupt. It was very quick. There wasn't a lot of, you know, this is what happened, and this, like, there wasn't a lead up into it like what we're seeing with B. And he was, you know, cutting in the dark with a machete, and he cut his finger open because he's cutting in the dark with a machete on a coconut.
I know that James, second time that he was medically evacuated, that it was also a knee issue for him. And I think that happened in one of the Schmergen Brawl challenges. And that seems like a similar situation to this, where there's no sort of like a cut we've seen in different seasons. Obviously, Penner from the first time you played. And then also in Ko Rong, I think that there was one of the other people that got medically evacuated. I think it was Neil, had something going on with a cut in the knee. But it is unusual to see somebody leave with some sort of an injury that is, you know, some sort of like a muscle or a tendon.
Right. Not like a non life threatening injury. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
And again, and this is, I know I'm going to get lots of tweets and comments from people that know about this, this medical stuff. So we are talking out of our butts here. Okay.
Well, so my second season, I was medically evacuated too. And I do, one of the things that is interesting about medical evacuations and how they handle them, a lot depends too on the episode in which it happens, which I think we just kind of talked about with James. When he was evacuated in Fans versus Favorites, the initial injury took place in the dark when a camera was not on him. So there was very little footage of that actual event. With his finger. So that may have led into why it was trimmed so short within the show, within the episode.
And what did happen to him? And,
so what you mean, what happened to him, like from his injury?
What happened
you mean,
to his finger?
Cut it wide. He cut it wide open. Like he cut his hand wide open. He basically just hit. Basically, imagine him cutting his hand open with a machete. Yeah. Like he's about to hit a coconut, hits his hand. So they bandaged it, and then it became infected after the bandages were put on it. So it didn't matter. Like the bandages didn't matter. Nothing mattered. It was such a deep gash and became infected that he was going to possibly lose his hand.
Yeah.
So it's like you lose your hand or stay in Survivor, and he's like, take me away.
That's the right call. That is that would be the right call there. Eric, these players this season have had to deal with some really intense conditions in terms of the cyclone and the rainstorm. Which season that you played on had worse weather?
Definitely Fans versus Favorites.
Which one?
The first one. Not Caramoan, Micronesia. Damn, I forget. I hear Fans versus Favorites. I just know which season, but it's the first one.
People rarely refer to the second one as also Fans versus Favorites.
Yeah. It was something else. So Fans versus Favorites one, it was way worse. Drenched, cold, shivering, random nights like that. It got a lot better once we had a cave. It didn't matter what the weather was as soon as you have a cave, which was awesome. But the second season, so Karamoan, we slept on the beach almost every day, like at night. So you could go out and sleep on the beach. There were like, I think we had maybe two storms the entire season. We really lucked out. Like, mm-hmm. I can't believe the weather this season. It's nuts.
Yeah. It's this cyclone season.
Yeah. It's like, that's like first day too. I was like amazed. Like first, it's like day two or day three. And it's like, no mercy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get thrown right into it. Eric, they seem to be in such good spirits.
I mean, it's early. Maybe that's it. I don't know. I mean, it's crazy. That's a lot. That's a lot to deal with out there.
Okay. Talk to me about the mayor of Slamtown. Are you enjoying him?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm surprised.
Slamtown. That was the place that Joel took Chet in Micronesia.
A lot of people have been to Slamtown over the Survivor, and now we get to meet the mayor. So that's pretty cool. That's great. I mean, it is a voting year. You can get out and vote in this year. So
is John up for re-election in Slamtown this year?
I mean, this is his campaign run. This is him. He's running to be the mayor of Slamtown on Survivor. I think he's doing a great job, and he's not just a meathead. I honestly thought he was a meathead the first episode.
Yeah. He's not. Been very good.
He's showing some depth.
Yeah. And it seems like that he's very well liked. I don't think that we've seen anybody, speaking negatively about him yet.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of, I mean, what he said in his first, I think his very first interview when in his confessional, when he introduced all his crazy names, it came off as like, oh my God, this guy is so full of himself, but also was endearing now that we see, he's not really like that guy. Like he plays that role. He plays that character. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a cool dimensionality to him that we're getting to see. And you're right. I haven't heard any negative stuff about him.
Because traditionally, a really big guy on Survivor, especially a big muscular guy, is not often like a pleasant person in terms of how the other players view that person.
Right. Right. And usually the bigger guys get grumpy dad syndrome
right.
when they don't have any food.
Right.
And we haven't seen that yet.
No, he's been on the whole way.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, I've been impressed by him. And I thought it was going to be another, like a Brad Culpepper or like a Joel from Fans vs. Favorites 1 or something, but he's doing something else, which is cool.
So Natalie ends up surviving this vote. Only Jeremy votes for her. Do you think that people are looking at Natalie yet as somebody that may be a good person to bring to the end?
Yeah, I think that's the only reason they're keeping her, honestly. I think she's a female Philip Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
That's the correlation I am getting from her.
Yeah. So what are the similarities that you feel like between her and Philip?
So, I mean, like, let's see. So argumentativeness, unaware. There's this sense of unawareness that you are rubbing people the wrong way. There's a sense of grandeur, like a sense of this, like I'm special or I'm above people in a certain way, which I think every single contestant on Goliath Tribe has mentioned at one time during an interview.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little actual challenge threat too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this sweet spot of like terrible, like perfect, terrible second place person, which that's it. End of thing. Sorry.
Do you think that part of that has to be, and Philip was, I believe the oldest member on your tribe. And then also here is Natalie. Is that from somebody who, you know, again, I have not played Survivor as somebody who knows what the future holds. I'd like my dream would be to come back as sort of like be like the Rudy and come back. But if there were people that were much younger than me on a tribe telling me what to do and acting like they ran everything, that might annoy me too.
Well, imagine who's somebody else who had to deal with that? I look at Tarzan from One World, who I'm sure he got that every day of his life out there. And he took it a very different direction. He became this pleasant, like harmless old, like sloth type character.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of wandered around and all the girls did their alliances and they're like, oh, Tarzan's over there. He'll make final four or final five. So it's like, how do you, you know, there's enough pride there that Natalie, you know, reacts to. She reacts to her pride being assaulted, I guess.
Yeah, because I feel like that when Jeremy tried to talk to her last week, it did seem as though she was insulted that he was trying to say to her, hey, I've noticed this thing that I maybe you're not self-aware. And she seemed to be very upset with that. I know what that means. What do you think? I don't know what self-aware is.
Right. Like he reached out an olive branch and she lit it on fire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that really turned him against her to the point that he was dead set that he wanted to get rid of Natalie. And then somehow it came around back on him in this episode.
Right. And this is why I like newbie seasons over. Well, this is one of, I guess I don't like newbie seasons completely over All-Star seasons, but this is one of the beauty, like the cool things about newbie seasons, because in an All-Star season, it's very transactional in a way. Whereas in a newbie season, it becomes more emotional. It's more like an actual relationship between people instead of like, I do a good thing for you, you do a good thing for me. We know how this works. Not everybody understands how this works right away.
Can you explain what you mean by transactional?
So like, you know, you have an exchange between two players and one says to the other, like, you know, you're not self-aware or people are saying things about you. Like maybe I come to you, Rob, on the island. And I say, Rob, you know, people know that you've been eating a lot of the food and you have flatulence at night and you say degrading things about their children. And I want you to know, Rob, that people are saying these things. As a friend, I want you to know that.
Mm-hmm.
And if we were on an All-Star season, we played Survivor before, you'd say, okay, cool. I didn't know those conversations were going on. I didn't know those things were happening. I will stop making fun of their children and farting. And on a newbie season, you might say, you might be offended that I came to you and said those things. Like, what do you think you think you know better than me, you think this about me. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very different. It's like if you approach someone on the street almost and said those things.
Yeah. Well, with Natalie in particular, I think we saw that both ways, where we saw her in the first episode go to Mike White and say, hey, Mike White, just so you know, everybody is saying you're out there looking for the idol, so you better knock it off. And then we saw him.
The same thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he seemed like kind of annoyed, like, oh, Natalie is saying, like, hey, I know what you're doing out there looking for the idol. And then and then when Jeremy came to her and said, hey, I got to tell you this piece of news that I think that people are not really loving what you're putting out there, and maybe you're not self-aware about this, that she got annoyed. Right. So don't be the messenger, everybody.
Right. Apparently. So that's the other, maybe you should shut up.
Yeah. No good deed goes unpunished.
Right. Right. Like, what do you, how do you know better? Yeah.
Eric, I think that Jeremy really got into hot water at the point that he, you know, we saw him go and look in the bag for the idol last week and or in the jacket and confirm that Dan had the idol. But then this week we saw him telling everybody about Dan's idol. When that was happening, did you think that that was going to go sour for him?
Yeah. I mean, he just started to leak, like, everything. Like, he had his little powwow about let's not scramble, and then he just started to scramble. Like, he did the one thing that he was feeling anxious about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it totally, I think you're spot on. It just kind of fell apart, and information is totally currency, so.
Yeah, because I really think that the people that knew about the idol were the people that were really pushing for Jeremy to go home at that point, where maybe he wasn't doing great with everybody, but I think that then he really solidified himself as more of a threat. Now, Eric, did you ever go looking for the idol in anybody's bag?
I did not. I know I was there when they looked in Jason Siska's bag in Survivor Fans vs. Favorites Micronesia. And they had to ask, they actually had to ask production about it. They wanted to know if they could look in people's bags, and they said you can. But if you find an idol, it's not yours. You can't take it and rehide it. Like, it has to stay where it is. I don't know if precedent had been set before that, but I do remember that did happen, and we had to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never done anything like that. So my whole approach to idols has been completely opposite to everybody else's, which is I don't want an idol. If I ever am on again, I won't look for idols. I don't want them. I think they generally are cursed because they put a target on you. I think they're a waste. I think they're a waste of energy and a waste of time. Which is like really controversial. I've had a lot of people tell me I'm an idiot for that.
Yeah, well, let's explore that, because I remember in Survivor Karamoan when Andrea, I don't know if she got a clue. I think did she like
she had a clue.
She got she won one of the immunity challenges where she was on the doghouse, and then she got the clue for the idol, and then you helped her dig it up and handed it right to her. Like, did not try to slip it in your pocket or want anything to do it. Now, Andrea then ended up leaving that game with an idol, which then Dominic Abate ended up finding last season. But so why is it that you feel like that they are such a curse? Because we've seen so many people win the game with idols.
We have. That's true. I just know, you know, so a great example is the Andrea idol, because she was given an idol. And it was like public knowledge. Everybody essentially knew she had it. Like when I actually dug that idol up, I think there were four people present. And so at that point, the cat's out of the bag. Like, she has an idol, like, it's there. And, you know, you now have this pressure to, do I use it? Do I not? If people know about it, there's now new targets on you. There's new magnifying glasses on you to do something with it. It's all about like creating the lowest profile you can. If you have an idol, it just heightens your profile. So to me, the benefits don't outweigh the risks. Mm-hmm. And I'm really conservative with regard to how I play. So I wouldn't go that road. I wouldn't. Other people will, and other people will continue, and it will pay off for some, but I think the majority, it's not worth it.
Well, I do think that what you're saying, I think, also makes sense with, you know, how people view you and how you're playing the game, because I think that, you know, you're not making anybody uncomfortable where, you know, we've seen different players, whether they're out looking for the idol or having, you know, all these different conversations that if I'm on a tribe with Eric Reichenbach, you're not doing anything that's going to be putting people, it's not at ease.
Right. That's the thing. Like, I don't like when I go to the bathroom, I'm going to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to sneak off for 2 hours and, you know, look for an idol. That's a safe way to play. Is it a winning way to play? I honestly don't know. Like, that's something I've struggled with is, you know, you can play really safe and you can make everybody like calm around you and make everybody think that you're like, oh, he's not going to find an idol or he's not going to, you know, flip over this or do this. But is that a way to win? Like, can you win at the end of the game? Because if you don't take any risks, you don't, you know, earn that reward at the end. So that's something I've struggled with too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's like anything in this game. This, you know, you could, you know, make yourself crazy going, thinking one thing or the other.
Right. Right.
Talk to me a little bit about Mike White. Have you enjoyed the Mike White experience so far?
I mean, I'm trying to think.
Are you a fan of his films?
I mean, no, I didn't even know he made films until then. He's kind of vanilla.
Yeah.
And he's like the second person on this season that reminds me of Cochran. Next person.
Yeah. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It is a good thing. No, it's a good thing. And I think I like that he's on the Goliath tribe because he kind of sits in opposition in a lot of ways to the personality base of that tribe. And I'm curious to see what happens the further he makes it. Cause I do think he will go far because he will be, the calm, stable person in between a couple crazy people that are going to try and strategize after this swap.
Yeah.
So I think he's like, we have yet to see the best of him.
Yeah. I think he's set up pretty well. I do think he's going to be around for a while, especially if he ends up after the merge with Christian, because I think that people are going to look at Christian as, okay, he's the person who is the threat that we have to worry about, that he's so smart, that he's so strategic, where, you know, I don't know if Mike White is giving off less of those Cochran vibes than Christian is.
Yeah, I mean, Christian's like a 10 on the Cochran scale.
On the Cochrometer, yeah.
On the Cochrometer, right. He is a 10, I think. I think White is like, he's like a blend of like a Penner and a Cochran, if Ooh. That's a thing. And I don't, because he has the personality and the calmness of a Cochran, but he has kind of the background of a Penner mm-hmm. and possibly the strategy of a Penner.
we'll see. The strategy of a Penner, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's a good thing. I think Penner's great. I think in terms of his, you know, analysis of things, some of the things that Mike has said in interviews have been really articulate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Penner's a real straight shooter when it comes to playing the game. He has the reputation from his first season because of the mutiny, of being underhanded. But I think for the most part that he is pretty much, you know, he says what he means.
So Penner's mutiny, I think, is ahead of its time, right? I mean, a mutiny by Penner in, you know, post Game Changers would be a brilliant move, would be a great move.
Be celebrated.
Right. Exactly. I think Penner was ahead of his time. And at the time, you know, the old school are like, oh man, what a devious move. And it's like, wait a couple more seasons.
Right. When you look at it through the perspective of like going back to Jerry Manthe, like the Survivor villain, and like, what did she do? She didn't want to eat the rice or anything like that. Penner, yeah. I mean, that if you asked him about it, he would say, I just did what Candace did. Candace stepped off. I stepped off too. That was my ally.
Right. that's like the guy who parks really terrible on a spot, and he's like, "Oh, I was within the spot though."
The guy next like, to me, his line was over.
Yeah, yeah. He would have an excuse. He'd have a reason for it.
Yeah, Eric. Nick has a strategy in this season of wants to name all the alliances. I feel like you don't like named alliances.
What, with the Mason Dixon?
Yes.
I mean, I don't... So I have to draw a comic each week, and I don't know what to draw for the Mason-Dixon Alliance because I keep thinking of a Confederate flag, but that's just really out of bounds, I think. So that's part of the problem. Like picking like the Onion Alliance, I can draw the Onion Alliance. That's easy. That's simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I think that's why. I think that's why.
Mm-hmm. So, Eric, there was a talk on the show last week or the first couple of weeks about how, you know, Dan is a big comic book reader and that he was making an alliance with Kara, who has the same name as Kara, who is Supergirl. And so one of the things that we were thinking about getting ready to talk to you was that could you potentially see any of these Survivor players as superheroes who might appear in a comic book?
So I didn't know that, first of all. So I'm going to have to draw Kara as Supergirl and then Dan as another character in there and then Superdog, Kara the Superdog as well. With regard to superheroes, all right, let me try and do some relationship.
Okay. I could give you some superhero names and then could you tell me what the concept would be if you were going to draw them?
I mean, I can think of comic book characters now that I'm kind of like ruminating on it. I could see like Mike as Doctor Strange.
Okay.
I think he would make a great Doctor Strange. I'm trying to think of Thor. So Thor would definitely be like Dan. I think SWAT Team Dan would be Thor character. Or, you know, Captain America fits him better, really. Mm-hmm. He would be a Captain America.
Yeah. Now, if you were going to draw Natalie Napalm, what would that look like?
Oh, my God. I think I'm going to draw that. If she lasts... If she lasts a couple more episodes, I will draw Natalie Napalm and it will be her and she'll be in some kind of large structure, like a kind of like a hovercraft type of structure with large gas tanks on it. So the large napalm tanks will be on it.
Yeah.
And she will be burning the forest and everyone will be screaming like, what are you doing? And she's just going to be like laughing, just like diabolical, like villain laughing.
Well, she even said to Jeremy that, hey, feel that burning on your eyes? That's the Natalie Napalm.
She
used her superpower on him.
Like she's like embodying it. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm. And she's like, by the way, your skin looks great. That's what she said. She said to Jeremy after she voted that she voted for Jeremy, said your eyes are stinging from the Natalie Napalm. And by the way, your skin looks great.
Wow, there's so many levels there. There's so much there.
It's like you get a burn, but then also a compliment out the door from Natalie.
I didn't catch any of that. Like I caught that she was saying something snarky and then I heard her say Natalie Napalm and I laughed. And by the time it was done, she was done. Like I didn't catch it. I got to go back and rewatch and like digest what she said.
Yeah.
That's some dark stuff there.
It's pretty dark. It's good that she comes in with a catchphrase. I'm glad she's got that firing on all cylinders, the Natalie Napalm.
Yeah, I'm going to keep pushing that hashtag out when I'm on Twitter.
Okay. Eric, I have some questions for you from the listeners of the podcast, if that's good for you.
Yeah, I have a little bit more time, okay. So yeah.
All right, Eric. Jonathan Summerfield wants to know, who does Eric think is most likely to give up immunity this season?
I don't think anybody is. I think everybody's there to win. Like, it's crazy. Like, I think everybody there is there to win. The only person maybe is Gabby, and it's because she's kind of hitting her low. She's going to hit a low next week. I'm really impressed with the Goliaths and I'm really like the Davids are like struggling, but I think they're all in it. I mean, they've already seen like the first day their one guy got medically evacuated. So they know it's serious. So I honestly don't see anybody giving up immunity except maybe Gabby.
Liam wants to ask, are you willing to come back for season 46? Now,
I know this guy, Liam, because he's on our Islands of Chaos Discord channel all the time. And he's actually one of the guys. He won one of our contests. So I made him into a character, too. So he always has these like trolly questions for me, which are really funny.
Yes. And that's interesting, Eric, because now I knew all along, you know, you played in season 16 and I played in season 6. You weren't there for that. But season 16, Then you came back for season 26. And I'm sure that we probably joked. I bet if somebody listens to that podcast from that we talked to during Survivor 27, I would suspect that I asked you, are you going to play in season 36? But you didn't play, but your necklace was there. And then you were on the finale. So you were in season 36.
I was kind of there in spirit. It was kind of weird. Yeah. So 46. That's 46. It. 46.
Boy, wouldn't that be something if Survivor was still on the air for Survivor 46?
46. I don't know how old I'll be, but I'll be around.
You'll be 5 years older than you are right now.
Okay. Oh my God. I'll be like the oldest contestant on the tribe. I'll be like ancient contestant.
Yeah. And you won't like all these young people that tell you what to do. So, that's so interesting that your stuff came back in season 36. So, let's answer the question from this perspective. Would you ever play Survivor again, Eric?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I totally would. It's, I can't say no
to
it.
So like, it's interesting. So I feel like that if when I talked to you, right after you played in Carmona, I feel like that you would have said no, you wouldn't play again.
Yeah, that was so. Carmona was a pretty bad time. The editing wasn't great and the experience wasn't great.
Yeah, I remember you being like really unhappy with Survivor right after that season.
I was pretty bitter, mm-hmm. definitely bitter. And a lot of that had to do with, you know, the finale. I think the finale had a lot of problems. I think the editing in general had a lot of problems. Mm-hmm. And I didn't like how heavy it was on gimmick. Like a great example is like they called back Rudy Bosch for the finale. Yeah. They didn't even talk to Sherry. Like I didn't particularly like Sherry, you know, outside of the game and hang out with Sherry, but she got third place on a season. She deserved to be talked to.
The Survivor Caramelin finale was, you know, infamously, you know, a hot mess. Like they could do a 30 for 30 on that you start with that the pre-jury people were sitting in the audience. That was the one where they had all that going on. They did have the segment with Rudy. That was weird. Boston Rob came up to promote his book, the Boston Rob rule book, available on Amazon.com. And then I think that Philip Shepherd was not thrilled that why didn't he get to talk about his book? We talked to the girl in the audience who was the big Malcolm fan, right?
Right.
And she got a question.
Yep. I think I remember all of this. And I just remember Eddie was like, look, Eddie Fox, who was next to me, got fourth, was looking at me like, when are they going to talk to us? And I'm like, I don't think they are.
And Cochran got to talk about his Twitter.
Yeah. And his Twitter blew up after that. Yeah. It was very bizarre.
So very bizarre. What a night. What a night for Survivor.
And it was what I remember happened was I did not go to, usually there's a big finale party after that. And I didn't even go to the finale party. I just left. I just went to the hotel. I was like, I'm not sure what just happened. And then the next morning, Dalton Ross of EW called me and he was just talking to me on the phone. He's like, dude, what happened? And I was just talking to him, but I kind of also knew it was an interview. And I just like went off and I remember that interview the next day on EW made a lot of waves.
Headlines. Yeah.
And it was me venting about all the things I thought that were wrong with what had happened. And, I mean, I have come around a lot since then and I definitely would go back and I feel like CBS has done a lot of good in terms of fixing some of the things. I know a lot of fans are going to hate me for or say there's no way the finales still are terrible. But I think they've done a lot of good in terms of editing and in terms of character development and listening to what the fan base wants.
I do think that there are certain things, you know, that they try to, you know, there's certain things that are, you know, it's never going to be 100%, but I do think that, you know, the intention is there to try to give people what they want.
Right. And I think I even suggested at the time, like if fans don't like finales, like you can gather up enough people to have an off air, like fan made finale if you want. Like you can ask questions. You can contact all the Survivor contestants and ask them all the questions you wanted answered at the finale on your own. And I'm sure you do that, Rob.
Well, you know, there's so many podcasts and you know, stuff like that where, you know, everybody, you know, that wants to be heard from gets to. But Eric, this is all that your Survivor journey is all the circle of life where you were a fan, you became a favorite, and then you went to the Survivor finale and were mad that people didn't talk to you. And then you come back in the future and then they talk to you at a Survivor finale and new Survivor contestants get mad. They're talking to you and not talking to them.
Right. It's all a cycle. Yeah. You know, I wasn't even mad that they didn't talk to me at Caramon. Yeah. There was a lot of things they just did wrong. And I think I went into that and I was talking to a friend of ours who's also a big Survivor fan, and he's more of a super fan than I am. His name's Brian. And he was like telling me like, dude, they're probably not going to talk to you. And I was like, yeah, I think you're right. So don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. But I know that Eddie was like, you know, he didn't know what's going on. Right. And Sherry definitely didn't know what's going on. And Allie in the audience didn't know what's going on. So,
yeah. Brenda also, they revealed that she had a baby. It was what a crazy night of television.
Yeah. We don't need to relive it anymore.
Well, there's so many memorable moments. I mean, for a show that we're saying was not great, there was a lot there. But I do think that in terms of like the top five most memorable Survivor finales, for good or bad, that's definitely up there.
Yeah. It's like, up there with. Yeah.
Yeah. I could barely tell you, you know, three things that happened in the, you know, fans versus favorites original reunion show.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure really strained. I'm sure I could come up with something. But, you know, what's better to be, you know, infamous or non-memorable?
So it's weird because, you know, I guess what I did with the stupid mistake would be classified as infamous in a way. And I always get like people don't remember that season, fans versus favorites one, until they hear, oh yeah, I gave up immunity, or they hear that moment. Like that's kind of like the peak, the pinnacle moment of that season, like the climax of like, oh yeah, the fans are idiots and the favorites are really good.
Yeah.
Like that kind of encapsulates it.
And if I recall, I mean, that was not in the finale where that was the final five, but that happened in the old format where now that would have been like, you know, in the second hour of the finale, you know, that got its own, you know, hour to play out as opposed to sort of being rushed in a final five if it took place in modern times.
Right. It happened the week before the finale. It was a Wednesday show and then the Sunday was the finale. So it was like the lead into the finale. Yeah.
It was even a Thursday show at that time.
Yes. Yeah. I remember. So I barely remember that because I think James was like buying me alcohol all night.
Which time?
That was the first time. So that was Micronesia. I was in New York. They had the finale.
Why is James always giving you alcohol in these stories?
Well, he feels bad for me. and he always has alcohol. And it's always really good. Like, it's not bad. It's like it's delicious.
Alcohol's delicious.
There's some that, Rob, you may not believe this, but some alcohol is terrible.
Yeah, I hear you.
Some is bad. Some is bad.
Yeah, Eric, which former players do you keep in touch with, if any?
I'm trying to think, honestly. Steven Fischbach, obviously, because we did the comic.
Yes.
I keep in touch with... I'm trying to remember. I don't keep in touch with a ton. Yeah. I usually go to Give Kids the World, which is the charity in Florida, which is amazing. And if you're a fan, you should go. And then I reconnect with a lot of people. But generally, Twitter is my main source of connection. I think the one recent player I've been in contact with is Bradley from Ghost Island, only because he grew up in East Lansing, Michigan, which is where I just moved from. So I live in Michigan and he's from Michigan too. So we met up. I don't know if he's still in Michigan though. He has kind of wandered away.
He's going to be here in the studio in a couple of weeks.
Okay. So he's wandered away now, but I really don't see very many just because I am in Michigan. And I think the only major notable one is now in jail here.
Yeah. You don't say.
So that's bad.
Yeah, so not good.
I'm not going to go to jail to meet Mike Scoop.
Right. In terms of, so when you go to an event like that, like who's like one or two of your favorite people that you want to make sure you talk to when you go to something like that?
So I always see, if I can, I'll see Todd Herzog. He's awesome. I always see Bob Crowley. Bob Crowley is like, Bob always says that he never would have won Survivor Gabon if he wouldn't have seen my season where I gave up immunity, because he was debating giving up immunity to somebody at some point.
Oh.
And I think he just made that up to make me feel better, but
I don't think so. I think that might have happened.
He says that every time, and I'm like, Bob, it's fine. Don't worry about it. And he's like, no, I got to let you know that. And so I see Bob.
Give you $100 for that.
Yeah. Give me some percentage. Mm-hmm. And then if I can, I usually see Sandra, because Sandra's amazing.
Yes. She's the very best and very awesome.
Yep. I see Billy Garcia. I love Billy Garcia. He's awesome, too.
Very fun.
I'm trying to think. I tried to talk to Hayden, but Hayden's always super popular.
Hayden Moss.
Big Brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hayden Moss, yeah.
Well, yeah, because he's got to both shows.
Yeah, he's always running around. He's doing all kinds of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else stands out. I always see Jane.
Yes, Jane Bright.
Yep, and she was on the season I didn't watch, Nicaragua.
Yeah.
But she also breeds dogs, so we always talk to her because I have two golden retrievers, so we're always talking to her about golden retrievers and dog breeding and stuff.
Did you talk to Stephen Fishback about golden retrievers?
Yes.
Yes.
And I just set up an Instagram with my art, but my dogs have had an Instagram longer than I have, and I think they have more followers, which is because they're so adorable.
What are their names?
So Avalo, spelled A-V-A-L-O, and Nico, N-I-C-O. Let me look up their Instagram here. It's hilarious.
Is it Avalo Nicholas?
Let me see here. No.
No,
on Instagram.
That's some guy. Sorry about
that's
that.
That's some weird dude. And if he takes dog pictures, don't look at them. It is... Avalo and Nico, RCHNBCH.
Okay. You might have to tweet that to me.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
We'll go.
I'll take a photo.
Okay. Eric, this is another question from Twitter, and this is from Chihuahua on Twitter, at Chihuahua Heidi. What's your favorite Halloween candy?
Favorite Halloween candy? Oh, God. There's so many good ones. It's got to be the pumpkins. It's got to be candy corn pumpkins.
Candy corn pumpkins. That sounds terrible.
Well, a certain segment of the population hates candy corn, and they think that they reuse them every year. Which they do.
That's true.
You have to watch out because some candy corn is like hard as a rock, and you'll like break a tooth on it.
My older son, that I think he is very into candy corn because he sees it like on YouTube and in pictures, and he thinks he wants it, but I think it's because he's never had it.
Okay.
Like, Dad, we're gonna get candy corn. I'm like, no, it's not good. He's like, yes, it is.
Well, the key of it is it's honey. That's what the weirdest thing is. Like the flavor, it's made of honey. And I never knew that. Like I thought it just had a flavor, like a starchy flavor, but it's honey. And once I learned it's honey, I was like, okay, I'm more open to this. Let me see here.
All right. How about this question from Seth? This is from Bugcatcher Seth on Twitter. What advice would Eric give for a new player that gets put on a fans versus favorite season?
Oh, God. You got to pray. You got to start praying. On a fans versus favorite season, I would wait for a swap.
Yeah.
And it all depends on your personality, but you really need to team up with the favorites in some regard. You either need to offer yourself as an asset to them, or the only thing you can really pray for as a fan on a fans versus favorite season is that the fans win enough and that the favorites tribe is so dysfunctional that they keep losing and that you can have numbers, because you just have to have numbers in some form if you're a fan. If you don't have numbers or it's like a tie, and you go into a swap or a merge situation, you're going to have to become a tool for another player, for a better player.
Do you think they'll ever do another fans versus favorite season?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It's so lopsided. Yeah.
I think that they could do it again when you play in Survivor 46. That I think if it's like fans versus favorites versus celebrities or something like that, where if they like sort of like maybe changed up the dynamic a little bit, where it's not just 10 people that know what they're doing versus 10 people that don't know what they're doing. I feel like that maybe if you fans versus favorites versus famous faces.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so lopsided. It's so one-sided.
Because
so
because here's what I think. I think that the favorites would just want to keep the celebrities around. And so, but I don't know. Like, but the famous people might want to work with the fans. So
I could see like a three-tier system. Like you could have newbies versus second-time players versus maybe winners. So a winners tribe and a second place tribe necessarily wouldn't get along.
Mm-hmm.
That might not be a bad, you know, a bad angle.
Okay. This is a question from a listener named Eric. This is confusing. Okay. A listener named Eric writes in and who also spells it E-R-I-K. Hey, Robin, okay. Eric. What do you think about Jeremy not letting Natalie have that private conversation with part of the tribe? Obviously, it should be a red flag that she didn't want you included, but does that come off as paranoid to the other members of the tribe? How do you think about the way that Jeremy handled that situation?
I thought that was pretty weird, and I thought it was pretty biased in a way. In like, it was like a one, it was like kind of a, you know, he won't let other people talk, but he'll go talk. Like, you can't have it both ways. Like, you have to respect it. It was a bit disrespectful, and it was a bit, the etiquette was off. And I think it was just because Jeremy was unraveling. Like, his paranoia was just unraveling.
Yeah, but what should you do if you're Jeremy in that spot?
I mean, you can't stop people from talking. You just can't. Like, you just gotta go, you gotta, like, you live with it, really.
You just say, okay, I guess, all right, well, have fun.
I mean, the only thing you could do, like, the only way you could benefit from disrupting other people trying to have conversations is if you like concentrate all their votes onto you and then you play an idol. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the only benefit I could really see.
Did you ever have a situation like that where somebody wanted to have a conversation and did not want you as part of that conversation?
I've seen people butt in. Like, people are like, you know, they'll hover around people. It like drove me
a Stealth R Us meeting, and they're like, Eric,
Stealth R Us, completely Stealth R Us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And did they ever ask you to, could you leave so we can have this meeting?
Yes. I've had Philip multiple times say, you know, we are reserving this boardroom, which is like a bunch of trees.
The boardroom.
He reserved the boardroom, which is a bunch of trees, for himself and Dawn and Cochrane. And I would have to go. And I would just leave, and I'd be, and Malcolm or somebody would be like, what happened? And I'd be like, oh, they're having a meeting. It was like really weird, but Philip would do that a lot.
Eric, the three amigos vote from Survivor Carmona, also another famous Survivor moment that you were involved in. And you were somebody who ended up switching your vote that night to ultimately vote against Philip. Did you realize at the moment that that was going to also be another iconic Survivor moment you were involved in?
So I didn't know that they had the two idols at all. And Malcolm tried to like clue me into that beforehand because he wanted me to be a part of them, like the part of the three amigos. It was going to be the four, and the fourth was either going to be me or Cochrane, and we both kind of declined. But when that actually happened, that was pretty incredible that they actually did it. I just thought it was, it also kind of was like one of Malcolm's last great moves in that season, because after that, Dawn didn't trust him at all. And a lot of other people didn't trust him at all. But that definitely was like a major moment of the season when that did happen. That was pretty awesome. Yeah. Just like Cochrane kind of knew that too when we were there. Mm-hmm.
And at the time, you know, it felt like that maybe you were going to get on board with those guys. Was that ever a consideration?
No, I totally strung them along. Like, mm-hmm. I didn't have any intention of joining them, but they kept giving me information, like thinking that I would. And there was no way I wanted to do that because I didn't think I could beat the three of them in the end.
Yeah.
Reynolds, because he was a fan. Eddie, because he was a fan and well-liked. Malcolm, because he was like a huge challenge threat. But I just kind of kept stringing them along because they kept giving me information and I thought it was good.
Yeah.
There was no way. There was no way. And it wasn't anything personal either. It's just, I could not beat them.
Eric, did you see that Brenda Lowe is going to be one of the suitcase ladies on the new version of Deal or No Deal?
Yeah, that's really cool. That is really cool. We learned that, I think, a little bit ago. Yeah.
That is exciting. Are you going to watch it?
I don't have cable. I don't know where I can find it. I have Hulu and I have Netflix. If it's on there, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know what it's on. I don't know if it's going to... The original was on NBC. I'm not sure if necessarily it's going to be... yeah.
Some NBC things are on Hulu. I do, and I think Survivor's on Hulu as well, so that's cool. But I don't know where it is, but that is really cool that she's on there. That's awesome for her.
Yeah, it'd be very, very exciting to see. Do they get the same suitcase all the time? Will she be like a certain, like a sports team? She gets assigned a number.
You're going to have to interview her. I don't know how it works.
Yeah, I don't know why I think that you're the authority on the Deal or No Deal.
I have no idea if it's a suitcase. I mean, I have yet to get my call to be a suitcase girl. Maybe the email went to spam. I don't know. Somewhere.
Maybe they call you last minute, like the Survivor reunion.
Yeah, I'll get a call soon.
All right, Eric, Jason Weatherholt wants to know, Eric, in your opinion, who made the worst move in Survivor history?
Worst move? God, there's so many.
Do you have a take on this?
I mean, I don't. I don't really, because I don't qualify things, unfortunately, like worst. I think you could say the first person voted off every season made the worst move.
No, I disagree. I think the person that takes the wrong person to the end makes the worst move, because the way that I have quantified this, and I don't think that you made the worst move in Survivor history, because I don't think, if you play that out, are you winning Micronesia if you don't give the immunity necklace away that night?
Probably not.
I mean, probably not. I mean, there's a chance.
You might get close.
You might get close, but I look at it where if somebody that takes the wrong person to the end, and if you want to say that Wu, if he would have taken Cass to the end, you know, if he goes on to win, and I think that people would argue, including Cass, who I spoke to last week on the podcast, that, okay, it's not, you know, that she would go on to beat Wu. But whatever one of these instances where somebody takes the wrong person to the final two, whether it's Colby that he would have won if he would have takes Keith, I open this suitcase for Brenda Lowe. I open this suitcase, I win. I open this suitcase, I lose. And you open that one. That's the worst move in the show.
I guess if you quantify it by move, like the choice made that screwed you over, then I guess you can. I would say, yeah, you can quantify it. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah, because it's 100% I win if I do this and 100% I lose if I do this. It's got to be that. And, you know, and what you did is not a binary thing like that.
Right. There's more vagueness to it and more. Yeah, there's more. Yeah. Definitely stupid. Definitely not the best option. Yeah. But
because there are still because who was going to go home that night? It was going to be Natalie.
Yeah, I think it was just Natalie. Like, that was the default. Yeah.
Right. So you still have to maneuver your way around three Survivor Hall of Famers.
Right. Right.
You know. So good luck with that.
Right.
It would have been final two, not even a final three.
Exactly. It still would have been very tough. I agree. And it would have probably been a challenge. You know, I think I would have had a decent shot at physical challenges like running, jumping, climbing, that sort of thing. Anything where I had to sit for a long period of time, I do notoriously bad at those challenges. So if it was,
why? You're too antsy.
I just can't sit still. Like I can't do it. So I like any kind of like balance beam for a long period of time, or hold your hand on something for a long period of time. I'm giving up for gummy bears. So
not candy corn.
I mean, yeah, but I don't think they have it out there.
Okay.
They just don't have it out there.
Eric, anything else you want to say about this season or anything you have going on?
I'm just excited. You know, this season is, the theme isn't particularly amazing. It seems a little gimmicky. That said, the characters I think are really, They have a lot of depth to them, which I'm surprised by and pleasantly surprised by. I'm going to keep making comics with Stephen Fishbach. I'm going to interview a couple more people, interesting people for my YouTube channel. So I've interviewed.
Tell me about this. I don't even know about this.
So I just kind of was winging it with YouTube. Like I have all these comics and art stuff that I do. And I've just started to kind of go into this foray of, I'm going to interview people that do really weird things that I have no idea like what it is. And they need to explain it to me like I'm an outsider to it. And I'm calling them outsider interviews. And I interviewed, for instance, Stephen Fishbach recently about Dungeons and Dragons.
Yo, what does he know about Dungeons and Dragons?
So he's a dungeon master, apparently. So he's played, Stephen Fishbach has been the dungeon master, and he's like developed a world that people explore and adventure in. And I just interviewed him about that because as a kid, as an artist, I really liked the Monster Manual, which has all the cool monsters in it. And so I just started kind of talk to him about it. And Dungeons and Dragons surprisingly has a lot of connectivity with themes and ideas in the org communities, like in the Survivor org games.
Yeah.
If you're familiar with all of that.
Yeah.
So I just interviewed him about that. And then I'm going to interview a couple more people this week. And next week I'm going to interview a guy named Miles who worked on he runs a challenge, like a team building challenge company in LA.
Miles
Nye, and he's done some consulting work for Survivor for their challenges.
He's a frequent guest on Rob is a Podcast.
Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to talk to him about his business next week. I'm going to talk to somebody else about romance fiction because I have no idea what romance fiction is about. And that's like Fabio books and like.
Not the guy from the season you didn't watch.
No, not that Fabio. We're talking about. Yeah. You know, I don't even know what descent that guy is, what genealogical descent he is, but women love him. It's like those romance novels you see about like.
Yes. Okay. So yeah, fan fiction, but this is of the romance variety.
Literary romance variety. Right. So I'm going to talk to somebody about that. And I was hoping to talk to Kendall. I think her last name is Wilkinson. Who is one of the contestants on Bachelor in Paradise. She's currently dating Grocery Bag Joe, if you watch Bachelor in Paradise.
Okay.
Anyway, long story short, she announced on the show that she is involved in taxidermy. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea how someone gets involved in taxidermy and what that's about. And so I reached out to her on Twitter and I said, hey, can you do an interview with me and tell me like what taxidermy is about? I don't care about Bachelor in Paradise. I just want to know about taxidermy. Can you teach me about it on my YouTube channel? And she said, sure. And then she disappeared. So I'm trying to get a hold of her to get this interview in the can.
Yeah. Well, this is fantastic, Eric.
Yeah. There's so many things I'm curious about. And I have no idea. Like these weird little like niche communities that are like nestled in all these, like there's hundreds of thousands of people that love these things and I have no idea about any of them. So I'm just kind of like reaching out to people, like explain it to me.
Yeah. So it's like, what do they call that on Reddit? Like explain this to me like I'm five or something like that. Like that's a subreddit.
Yeah. And that's kind of, it's a mix of an IMA. So like a Reddit IMA or Reddit AMA, I should say. And then a mix of explain like I'm five, because like if someone's going to explain to me taxidermy, like I'm not going to understand what they're saying when they're like, we're going to pull skin off an animal or something. Like I'm not going to, they need to explain it more. Like why are we doing this? And the weirdest thing too, Rob, if you know of any Survivor reality contestants with weird, like quirks, like weird, like niche things,
you mean all of them.
I would love to talk to him about it because it's so fascinating what you learn.
Yeah. All right. Well, there's a lot of good ones out there. And how do people find this?
YouTube. So it's called Dabu Doodles. All my new stuff is called Dabu Doodles. It's just the name I'm using for everything I do.
Yeah, I found it, but it was hard to find.
Okay. I can send links and stuff, but it's so on YouTube, there's my website, which is just Dabu Doodles.
I'll put a link in the show post.
That works.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
So check it out. You can watch the first outsider interview with Stephen Fishback. I bet Stephen is really excited. I bet if I play it, he's going to be like, oh, ha! Like he's going to be like screaming.
He makes voices in it too. It's great.
Let's see. Okay.
Hello. Let me see if this works.
Oh, there you are. Hi.
Hey.
Hi, buddy.
You have your microphone?
Yeah. I'm actually not sure if it's going into the microphone, but I got it.
All right. Yeah, he seems more excited to talk to you, Eric.
Yeah. So it's funny. You'll hear like a couple seconds into that, I'm drinking like some horrible concoction of like, I don't even remember what. I was just drinking something while I was doing it. And it was like lemonade. I think it was like lemonade and champagne or something.
Okay. Not this other picture on Twitter where you're eating something gross about that Dana tweeted, if there's any indication of what our children will be eating, healthy food one day, I should be afraid.
Yep. That is a green and glowing smoothie.
Glowing?
It's called a green and glowing smoothie.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's got like, I don't want to say, I don't think kelp, I don't think it has kelp in it. Kale and spinach. She's saying it's kale and spinach and like mangoes.
Okay. And it's like, why'd you have to drink that?
Well, I drank it. I ended up drinking the whole thing. Like I actually, like it was, it's nutritious. It's good for you, but it was like gnarly. Like I can't do kale. I can't do liquid kale. Have you ever drank liquid kale?
No, I have not. I have not. I can barely tolerate it in a salad.
Yeah. It's like, and it's not even like, some people drink, like, do like wheatgrass shots and stuff. And I'm like.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't even know what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to be good for you, but, you know, I need to find somebody who, like, knows about healthy foods and finds out what they're supposed to do.
That's Dana for me. Yeah. That's Dana. Like, I would eat candy corn and like all kinds of terrible crap all day if I didn't have her around to be like, here, you need to drink a green and glowing.
All right. Yeah. Eric, but this was so much fun to catch up. Now, that can people also are you selling the art that you make for the People blog?
Yes, I'm selling prints of them. I have the originals, which I need to put online as well, but I am selling prints.
Like, how many do you make?
So when I do prints, I don't do a certain amount. I probably can do a certain amount, but usually I just sell prints, and they range, I think, from like $25 to $30.
Yeah, and then when you buy them, do they shred on the wall like the Banksy painting?
Like Banksy? That was impressive, by the way. Mm-hmm. That was so cool. I was so excited to see a room of just like snooty rich Londoners see a painting that they just bought for $1 million rip into little shreds.
They didn't have to pay for it then, right?
I mean, they should get a receipt, I would think. I think it doubled in price, if you must know. It doubled in price. Think about that. Think about how insane that is for the art. Like, that's the art world, man. I got an art degree, and I'm in the art world. And a painting shredded at a London auction house and doubled in price from $1 million to $2 million. That's insane. World, Eric. That's insane.
So go to dabudoodles.com. That's dabudoodles.com. The merge tribe name from Survivor Fans versus Favorites OG.
Yes. Yep.
There you go. Follow Eric Reichenbach on Twitter. He is Eric Reichenbach, but it's tricky. The A is a 4.
Yep. And someone took my account. That's why I have the 4 as an A in the end of my name.
But you're verified. You're verified with the 4.
I tried to get verified, and before I had some crazy name like Bloody American or something.
Yes, I remember.
Which was a joke because of the people in South Africa, because I got to go to South Africa because they actually watch Survivor in South Africa, American Survivor in South Africa. And they always said like, oh, we had a joke, you're the Bloody Americans. You're causing all these problems. Okay,
but not like literally bloody.
No, it's like they kind of like, because they speak Afrikaans, it's like a language thing.
Okay. All right. Well, Eric, thank you so much for coming on with me, staying up late. Really appreciate it. And this was a lot of fun to catch up.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Okay. And yeah, don't be such a stranger. I don't want to have to wait like 5 years to talk to you again.
Okay. Can I hear? You know what? I've been on your live Twitter feed, I think, when Tyson was on too. I said that Tyson looked funny or something.
Yes. Yes,
Tyson. I think it was promptly ignored. But I am around on Twitter, so I will harass you guys.
Okay, maybe we didn't know if it was the real you, or maybe Tyson was, I'm sure Tyson didn't want to hear that he looks funny.
Yeah, he had a really cool shirt on. So I said, Tyson sticking his head out of a bush. It was like a tropical shirt.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I think that's what it was. Exactly.
We'll go back into the archives. All right. Eric, thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Eric Reichenbach back here on the podcast. Very fun to catch up with Eric. Happy to hear he was in such good spirits tonight in our conversation. So where we're going to go from here is I'm going to get ready for that feedback show. Going to get ready to have Tyler Fredrickson here in the studio on Saturday. Get your questions in for Tyler. You can email us, survivor@robinswebsite.com. You can also call them in, 323-282-RHAP. And of course, you can leave us a message on your computer or your phone at robhasawebsite.com/voicemail. Love hearing from you guys. Love getting the feedback. I'm going to also on Friday tweet out a tweet that you guys can reply to as well. So as many different ways as you can, we want to get your questions into the show, and hope you guys enjoyed this conversation with Eric Reichenbach. If you can get out to Reno, we will be there on October 24th at the Peppermill Resort and Casino for our Re-Know-It-Alls. Myself, Tyson, Adam Klein, Boston Rob, Michelle Fitzgerald, Coach, got a great panel to talk about episode number 5 with us in person on October 24th at the Reno Peppermill Resort. No ticket required. Just show up and you can get in for that event with live karaoke party to follow. It's all completely free, courtesy of Jason Somerville and Running Up Reno. And then, of course, a quick shout out to the patrons of Robins the Podcast. Thank you for all of your support here, especially during the Survivor season. For more about all of the things that are so beneficiary to being a patron of Robins the Podcast, go to robinswebsite.com/patron. Have a good one, everybody. Talk to you again soon. Bye.